I mentioned this morning about the little village that we visited in Alaska this last Tuesday, and for those of you who are not here, I think I'll just review a little bit. Several of us flew out to a little village in the back country of Alaska. You can't get there by road. No way in the world you can get there by road. Only way in the world you can get there is to fly, unless you were to live on the river that runs by the little village and were to take a barge or a boat. No roads lead to it. You have to come in by plane. And here's the strange thing about it. They just sit there. We got there middle of the afternoon, maybe late afternoon, 3:30. And the men were just sitting on a log, looking at the river. That's all they were doing. I asked the pilot, how do these folks make a living? He said they get government checks from Washington. And they just sit there. We spoke. One of them grunted. We didn't know whether they were going to kill us or shake our hands. And I thought about it. I guess those fellas are still there right now, doing nothing. Just doing nothing. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? But that's all. I mean, that's it. They had no place to work. They'd catch a few fish and eat a few fish and go maybe trap a little bit, get a few animals and skin them. But no tourists go there. It's not a tourist place at all. A little old bitty hubble of a place where the most filthy... I don't see how they keep them freezing to death. But the thing that got me was absolutely feeling no purpose in life. None at all. Just existing until life is gone. Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, there's a reason you're here? There's a reason why you're alive. There's a man in this room tonight. He can't hear what I'm saying. He's deaf. He's in his 20s. He has a wife who's deaf. He has a little boy, I'm guessing 5 or 6, who's losing his hearing. Mother, father, little boy. I guess we'll all be deaf. A week ago last night, the man was sitting at the dinner table, and suddenly, like turning off the lights, his vision left. Deaf and blind. Think of it. How do you talk to him? How do you communicate? He's here tonight. I saw him walking down the hallway a while ago. You know, every one of us can hear and see, ought to jump down and shout and clap our hands and say, blessed be God. Think about it. And he walked in darkness. 9 days ago, he could see. Tonight, he pecks away with a cane on the floor. I saw him coming up the steps a while ago. He and his wife, deaf, he's blind. There's a purpose for his being here. There's a reason why he's here. I don't know what it is, but there's a reason. There's a reason for your being here. The smallest child in this room was not born accidentally in the mind of God. God planned you'd be here. Every baby in that nursery, God knew that baby would be born. It may have been a surprise to you, but not to God. Not to God. The most timid soul in this room tonight is the object of God's awareness. And God has a purpose for your life. I'm going to teach you something tonight, what I believe, and I can't take time to prove it, but I could if I had time. I believe there are three things in heaven already written out, have been ever since man was created. I believe the tabernacle was there. God said to Moses, build the tabernacle after the pattern you see in heaven. I think Moses looked up to heaven and saw the tabernacle in heaven and built every piece of furniture just like the pattern in heaven. That isn't all. I believe the Word of God was written in heaven before there was ever a man on the face of the earth. I believe Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, Samuel, Kings, Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalm, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, all of them. I think all of them were written out completely in heaven before man was ever created. That's one reason I believe in the verbal inspiration of the Bible. I think when God gave Moses what to write, I think he said, Moses, look up here and see what I've got. I want you to take this book I've got here in heaven and make a copy of it for earth. I think that when Moses and the writers of the Bible wrote it, I think it was just as much as a copy of heaven's Bible. I think there was a completed Bible in heaven before Adam and Eve were ever in the Garden of Eden. And I think when God gave the Bible to Moses, it was simply going to it like a Xerox machine saying, Moses, make a copy of this and give it to everybody down on earth. I'll tell you something else I believe also. I believe that the will of God was written down and filed in heaven for every person who would ever live on the face of this earth before Adam and Eve were placed in the Garden of Eden. I think God's will for your life is filed somewhere in heaven's files. And God has a plan. There's a reason you're here. That you're no uh-oh, you're on purpose. There's a reason you're here. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like Esther. Esther who saved the Jews from destruction while they're in bondage. You recall, it was said of Esther, who knows but what you came to the kingdom for such an hour as this. Esther was born, lived, turn me down just a trifle, fellas, born and lived for one reason. What was it? Save the Jews from destruction. There's a reason you're here. Maybe it's like David. It is said of David that he served his own generation by the will of God. Maybe you're here for a purpose like Hannah. Hannah was here to give birth to one boy, and that's all. You recall how she prayed for a boy. God gave her a boy. She said, if you'll give me a boy, I'll lend him back to you as long as he lives. When Samuel was old enough, she took him down to the temple. She gave him to the high priest Eli. She said, live there. She only saw him once a year. She didn't want a boy for her selfish purposes. Girls over here in the corner, listen to me. She didn't want a boy for selfish purposes. She wanted a boy to give him to God. She didn't say, Lord, give me a boy so I can Gucci goo him. I'm not against Gucci gooing. I think it's a very fine thing to do to a child. If you do enough gooching along with the gooing, I think. But she didn't say, I want a boy so I can have somebody to take care of me when I get old. She didn't say, I want a boy so I can have somebody to give me comfort. She didn't have to say, I want a boy so I won't be alone. She said, I want a boy because I want a boy to serve you and let you have him as long as you live. Maybe God put you here like he did Jochebed. Jochebed was placed here on the face of the earth for one purpose, and that was to build an ark out of bulrushes and put little baby Moses in it and dab it with pitch and put it in the river and then later on raise Moses to be the great leader of God's people. Maybe God put you here like he did Moses to be a great leader of people. Maybe God put you here like he did Paul to be a witness to the Gentiles, or like Priscilla and Aquila to be good laymen to encourage the men of God like Priscilla and Aquila did, Apollos and Paul and others. Maybe God put you here like Lois and Eunice. Maybe God put you here to be a grandmother. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe the purpose in your life, the great purpose in your life, will not be fulfilled until you become a grandmother, and God put you here to instill in some grandchild character and virtue that will make them do a great work for God. Maybe God put you here to be a mother, to rear someone, some great man of God, or rear someone to do a great work for God. Maybe God put you here like he did Mr. Kimball, a Sunday school teacher who won Dwight L. Moody to Jesus Christ. Maybe God put you here to teach and to win that one young man that'll turn this nation back to God and back to right. Maybe God put you here like he did Samuel, not to be a great leader, but to train great leaders. Maybe God put you here like he did the little maid who was put here on earth to point Naaman to Elisha and say, a man of God can help you. Maybe God put you here to be like a little widow who gave her two mites and gave all she had, and that met those two mites dropping in the bottom of that collection plate have made such a noise it's been heard around the world for 2,000 years. Maybe God put you here to have a lunch basket of loaves and fishes to give to the master so he might feed the hungry multitudes. I don't know why you're here, but I know God has you here for a purpose. Ladies, 70, 80, 90 years of age, God has you here for a reason. Whatever it is, it's not for yourself. If to you life is feeding your face and satisfying your own delights, what a wretched life you live. If life to you is just to get something for yourself, what a miserable existence you must have. If life for you is just to think of self and nobody else, what a wretched life you have to live. God has placed you here to live for Him and to serve others. Pity the person who lives for himself. Wretched is the person who thinks first of himself. Miserable is that person who doesn't think of anybody but himself. I want my way. If I don't get my way, I'll fuss. I want to have my way. I want this. I want that. I'm mad if I don't get it, and I won't speak to you if I don't like it. Pity the person who lives that kind of a penury life for self. Miserable, wretched, unhappy, little satisfaction. I flew to Alaska last week. Got off the plane. Guess who met me? The pastor, his son, and Marguerite Tunis Buffington. Marguerite grew up in our church. And Dennis, one of our boys, he married Marguerite Tunis. And they're probably the best people in that church tonight. Probably the best people in the church there in Fairbanks, Alaska. Dennis is a great soul winner. Excited about soul winning. Marguerite's employed with the church, works in the church office. And she's the secretary at the church. And I began to think of some times when Marguerite came to my office. And Mrs. Tunis came to my office. She wasn't a real wicked girl. I mean, she was no C.W. Fisk, you know. But she wasn't a real wicked person. But there were times when I was worried about her. There were times when I wondered if she were gonna be going to sin. And there were times when Mrs. Tunis and I wept together and prayed. And I recall there was a boy she went with, and I didn't want her to go with him. And I was afraid too much familiarity was coming. And I prayed, and I prayed, and I taught. And I called her to my office, and I talked with her. And the pastor said, "She's a fine young lady, one of the finest we have in the church." I looked at Dennis. Dennis came down the aisle over here one night with Marguerite, and I didn't like it because I don't like any of our girls to bring any strange boys in here. We got enough boys to take care of all you gals. We got enough gals to take care of all you boys. I'm hereby handing down a bull. I'm speaking ex cathedra. I don't mean I'm giving you Dr. Billings. I say I'm handing down a bull. I'm speaking ex cathedra. I hereby declare none of our boys can go with any girl in the world except our own girls. And none of our girls can go with anybody except her own boys. But Marguerite disobeyed the rule. down this aisle they came. And I thought, I wonder what he's like. I wanted to go and punch him in the nose just in case he was bad. So it wasn't long till I got a telephone call. Late at night, and a fellow said, "My name's Dennis Buffington." Brother Hiles said, your sermon tonight got to me. And he said, "I want to be saved." And I won Dennis to Christ over the telephone. And they're up there, and Marguerite came to me before I left. And she took my hand, and she said, "Brother Hiles, I wouldn't have made it if it hadn't been for you." She said, "Of course, my parents." But she said, "Brother Hiles, if it hadn't been for you, I'd never made it." And she began to weep and thank me. And I thought, isn't it wonderful to be used of God? Oh, to be used of God. I was sitting one night eating a bite, and across over the other side of the room was a fellow. He walked over, and he's building the biggest church in all of Alaska. There are only 300,000 people in Alaska. He has a Sunday school, runs 1,000. Now stop and think about that. He has one person out of every 100 in the entire country of Alaska coming to his Sunday school. Now, boy, that's something. A good-looking fella, and I'd seen him, didn't know who he was much. He'd invited me to preach in his church, and I had the dates filled. He came across the restaurant. He said, "Dr. Hiles," or he sitting across from me for a while, he said, "Dr. Hiles, you don't know it, but I'm one of your preacher boys." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, I came to the pastor school 3 times, and I learned how to get the job done for God. And he said, "I get your tapes." He'll hear what I'm saying now. "I get your tapes every week up here in Anchorage, Alaska." And he said, "I owe so much to your ministry." And I said to myself, isn't it wonderful to be used of God? Jim Crawl and Dave Hiles went with me to speak on youth work and bus work. While Jim was preaching one night, I looked up at him and I thought, now, is that the Jim Crawl I used to fret about? I thought he ended up in the penitentiary. Still sometimes worry about it. But is that the one? I recall one night I was going down the stairs to go out to the alley to come down to the service. I looked down there in the hallway underneath the offices, and it was dark, and there was Jim with a young lady and one of our girls. And I don't think they're doing anything wrong, probably talking about the 23rd Psalm or something. And I got worried. Then I walked down here one time underneath over here, and he was down there with the same girl, and they weren't doing anything wrong, just discussing predestination, whether he was predestined to kiss her or not, and discussing the hereafter, because that's what he came here after. And a little louder. And I worried about him some, and I thought, now that's Jim Crawl. And he was preaching, and the fellows were a blessing. And of course, not because Dave happens to have the name Hiles, but because he was God was blessing him, and they had a lot of people saved up there. I thought, isn't it wonderful for God to use you? There's nothing in this world. I don't care how rich you get. Nothing compares with being used of God. I don't care how famous you get. Nothing compares to being used of God. I don't care how popular you get. Nothing compares to being used of God. I don't care how pretty you get. Nothing compares to be used of God. There's nothing in this world. Nothing. I don't care what it is. There's nothing in this world to take the place of being used for God. And I thought, what a lie. Other than that, graduation exercises. These kids came across to get their diplomas, and I began to relive all the hours we spent together and all the conferences and all the sessions. And I went back to my study and said, thank you, God, that you can use me. Thank you that you can use me. What a life. God has a plan for you. I mentioned this morning, we're walking down the street, a little bitty hovel of a place. You can't even understand how the village was. I mean, there's no way to get there by road. You got to fly in or swim in. And way out in the back, not even a store in town. No postman. No conveniences at all much. And we're walking down a street. You folks weren't here this morning, did not hear me say this. A little old dusty street. And Dave said, hey, Dad, look here. And I looked around, and there was an old lady. And she was sitting down on one of her legs. And Dave said, Dad, I think she's fallen. And we rushed up, and I reached out, took her hand. And David asked her, did you fall down? Or one of us did. And she began to moan a little bit. And I said, are you hurt? And she began to moan. I saw a walking stick a little bit away from her, and she was reaching for that walking stick, trying to find it. And I realized that she was blind. And I've thought about her 100 times since then. She's there tonight in that same little house. And she's never seen the river that goes by the house. And she's never seen the folks in the house. And she's never seen the sunrise. And she's never seen the sunset. And she'll never in this world see the beauties of God's creation. Mountains all around, she'll never see the mountains. Snow on top of the mountains, she'll never see the snow in this world. River passing by, she'll never see the river. Lakes all around, she'll never see the lakes. She's blind. She's there. Now, what's she there for? I don't know, but God has a purpose. There's a reason she's there. Listen, there's only one thing in this world. Listen, there's only one thing in this world you can do that's great, and that's do the will of God for your life. Do the thing that God put you here to do. Your name may be Rockefeller, but you'll be a miserable wretch in the sight of God unless you're doing what God put you here to do. You may become Cecil B. DeMille. But unless you're doing God's will for your life, and if you become Cecil DeMille, you will not be doing God's will for your life. It's not God's will that anybody go out there and ruin the morals and decency of our country and wreck our young people and make a lot of money on sex and perversion and sin and wife swapping and all the rest of it. It's not God's will anybody make money like that. I talked this morning in my Sunday school class on Moab, Elimelech and Naomi going down to Moab and going into sin, and God punished them and so forth. And a fellow met me out in the alley, and I won't call his name, wasn't remember here, met me out in the alley, and he was trying to trick me, and he said, well, wasn't Ruth in the line of the seed to carry Christ, and how would Ruth and Boaz gotten together if Naomi and Elimelech hadn't have gone down to Moab? He said, don't you think that God was in it? And I said, not at all. God may allow sometimes evil to bring about good, but God never purposes anybody to do wrong to do something that's right. He never does at all. Never is the purpose of God to do wrong. Never. And that little lady, she's there. She's there. Now, why are you here? Find it. Find the will of God for your life. Find the purpose for your existence. Get in the center of God's will and snuggle up there and stay there. If you go broke, do God's will. If you don't have a friend in the whole world, do God's will. If you don't make one dime, do God's will. If you don't have any clothes to wear but wrap a sheet around you, do God's will. You'll never be happy. Never, 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 never be happy till you find the will of God and the purpose for your life and get there and stay there. You think you'll be happy because you make a lot of money. You're traveling down the wrong roads. You won't. Money never has made anybody happy. Money never will make anybody happy. Money's made more folks miserable than it's made happy. Now look at the type God uses. I want to be used of God. I do not care whether I've got a dime or not. I want to be used of God. I don't care. I don't mean I don't care. I want to have friends, but I'd rather have no friends in this world than be used of God. Just to be used of God. Just to be used of God. Now, what kind of people does God use? God uses bad people. Hey, let's see. What kind of folks God uses? Look at the 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 26. Very carefully, please. You know, we have the idea that that God uses good people. You know, used to when I first began to preach, I recall one time we had two beautiful girls got saved in our church in Marshall, Texas. Both of them cheerleaders at Marshall High School. And they were two of the prettiest teenage girls that I'd ever seen. They came down and got saved. Very popular in school. It spread all over Marshall. Those girls got saved. And I thought, boy, God can use them because they're so beautiful. God can use your beauty. No. No, God doesn't need any beauty. He painted the rainbow and painted the sunset. God dropped like heavenly chandeliers the stars in place. God made the mountains and put the whipped cream on top. And God made the lakes and valleys. And God made the beaches. And God made the dandelion. And God made the tulip. And God made the gladiola. And God made the beautiful rose. God's not bankrupt for beauty. God doesn't need beautiful girls. God needs dedicated girls. Now, if you're beautiful, okay. God doesn't need strength. I used to think, boy, that big old football player, if he'd give his life to God, God could sure use him. Yeah, but it wouldn't be because he's a big football player, because he gave his life to God. God can use a little ping pong player just as much as he can use a big football player. God can use a tiddlywink player as much as he can use a football player. God's not concerned about your football. You say, well, boy, you're his strength. God could sure use his strength. Well, I got news for you. God's getting along pretty well without his strength. God holds the world in place. God made the mountains and God made the trees, and God doesn't need to borrow anybody's strength. God does not need your flesh because it's pretty or big. God wants to use you because He wants to get glory out of frail creatures such as we are. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. Isn't that amazing? God has to put up people like you and me. God has chosen, now get this, here's the one God uses. God has chosen the foolish things of this world. Hey, you know what the word foolish there means? Huh? You Greek students, it's the word moros, M-O-R-O-S. We get our word moron from it. It says God has used the morons of this world to confound the wise. If you don't believe that, look at this platform. God uses the moron. That's what it says. That's what it says. God uses the morons to confound the wise. When I think about that, I think about this idiot in a certain church down south. There was the president of the First National Bank was a lost sinner, and this idiot was going to be a soul winner, and he does so like that, and he had a stupid look in his eye, and just an idiot, really. And so the president of the First National Bank came in the service, and the pastor looked back and saw the president of the First National Bank coming to church. And boy, he thought, I'm going to do my best tonight to really win that fella. And this idiot got up and walked back to the president of the bank and looked up, and he said, are you going to heaven? And the pastor thought, oh, my soul, my soul, my soul. Of all the people to meet him, that idiot. And he said, are you going to heaven? And the fella said, no! And the idiot then, well, go to hell then. And the president of the First National Bank said, I better not do that. And he fell on a conviction, got saved in the service that night. See, God uses morons, see. Bible says God's using. Now, don't you go around town telling Brother Howe, say Brother Howe, tell everybody to go to hell. I'm telling you what the idiot said. And that's what you're going to tell folks this idiot said, too. But that's the kind. What kind does God use? The mighty? No. Noble? No. Wise? No. He uses the morons. He uses the morons. He says God has chosen the foolish things to confound the wise. Let's notice. Let's go further. God hath chosen the weak things of this world. The word weak there means strengthless. Strengthless or feeble. It has in mind a little palsied condition because you're too weak. God uses the palsied people. It says, to confound the things which are mighty. And base things. The word base is an interesting word. It's a word, comes from two Greek words. One which is ah, and the other is genes. Ah genes. The word genes for birth. like genes, and the word ah means no in the Greek. And so what it means is God has chosen the ah genes, the no genes. What it means is God has chosen those come from no noble heritage at all. God has chosen those that come, that no count is really what it means. God has chosen the no count. We say, boy, God can use him. He has a Ph.D. And I'm not against Ph.D.s, but that's not why God uses Bob Billings. I'm not against Ph.D.s, but that's not why God uses Dr. Wendell Evans. And I just soon have Dr. Wendell Evans, and I mean this, and you professors can just sort of fit this the best way you can. I just soon have Dr. Wendell Evans as vice president of our college if he had not even gone to high school, if he had the same facts in his mind and the same wisdom he has tonight. I just soon have him. God's not impressed with degrees. As Billy Sunday used to say, he said, Billy Sunday, D.D. You heard about the theologian named Fiddle? He wouldn't accept his degree. He thought it was bad enough being called Fiddle, but he wasn't going to be called Fiddle D.D. And Billy Sunday said, okay, said Dr. So-and-so, D.D. He said, D.D. doesn't help a thing. It's like the curl on a pig's tail. It's mighty pretty to have on the back of the pig, but doesn't make any more pork. Don't forget that, Dr. Fisk. You still just as big a pig as you were before. There's no more bacon in you now than there was before. Oh, it's easy for us to get impressed with ourselves, isn't it? Huh? God doesn't use that kind of people. Somebody walks up, and I was watching a preacher on television recently. He got up and he said, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great joy for me to be here tonight. I've traveled across this great country, and God has raised me up for this day. How did the little fellow get up and say, pray for me, I'm about to stutter and I need your help. God doesn't use the mighty people. God doesn't necessarily use the handsome people. God can't use a handsome fellow that he thinks he's ugly. And God can't use a mighty person that he thinks he's weak. And God can't use a great person that he thinks he's base. God uses the morons, and God uses the strengthless, feeble people. And the base, our genes, no count, no heritage, no pedigree, no count. Goes on to say, God used the base things of this world, and the things which are despised. The word despise is a very interesting word. It comes from two words, one which is ek, which means out of, and the other which is alphais, which means nobody. And so God uses the despised, the out of nobodies. The out of nobodies. You know one reason I think God uses a fellow like me? My dad was a drunkard. My dad couldn't read. He couldn't even write his name. If he had to write Willis Athey Hiles, he'd write an X and somebody else had to write his name. Now I wonder why. I came out of nobody. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not making insults of my dad, but I came out of nobody. And God looks down and he sees these that come from... You know, when God had changed our nation and sent great revival in our nation, he never has taken the man out of seminary to do it. Never has. When God wanted to shake this nation, he didn't go to the seminary. He went to the shoe store in Boston, Massachusetts, and got a fellow who went to the ninth grade named D.L. Moody and shook this nation with him. You know why? Because if some Ph.D. from a seminary had shaken this nation for God, he'd have gotten all the praise and all the glory. But that ninth grade student shakes the nation for God, who gets the glory? God gets the glory. When God wanted to shake this nation, the first part of this generation, where did he go? To Princeton Seminary? Southwestern Seminary? Southern Seminary? Where'd he go? Went out over here to Chicago, out in the left field of the Chicago White Sox Stadium, Comiskey Park, and got the left fielder, Billy Sunday. Billy Sunday used terrible grammar. He'd get up and preach, and he'd look down toward hell. Come on, old smutty face, let's go a few rounds. That's no way to preach. Anybody knows that. You didn't get that from Hiles Anderson homiletics class. I'm not against homiletics, but I'm simply saying God does not usually use the profound, the mighty, the wise. God uses the base. And then he goes on to say, says, things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not. And that's very interesting too. The words are not there come from a Greek word which means shunned. Overlooked, like David was shunned when his father, Jesse, didn't think David would be the one. He thought of every boy he had, but not of David as becoming the king. Shunned! God uses the shunned ones to get his job done for God. God uses bad people. You come to God and say, dear God, I'm a good man and you can use me mightily. No. I'm always concerned about a man that thinks God's going to use him mightily. I tell you the kind of fellow God's going to use mightily. It's the kind of fellow that says, if God had used me at all, it's more than I deserve. Oh, I'm wicked and I'm vile and there's nothing good in me. And whatever good I have, it's because of Him. And if I get unselfish, the unselfishness is tainted by selfishness. And if I get good, it's tainted by bad. And if I do right, it's tainted by wrong. And Lord, how in the world you could ever use me, I don't understand, but here I am. I'll give you what I've got. My hands are weak, but they're yours. My body's weak, but it's yours. My feet are trembling, but they're yours. My mind is not great, but it's yours. My face is not handsome, but it's yours. My body is not big, but it's yours. All I have is yours if you can use me at all. A fellow called me on the phone the other day and he said, Brother Hiles, if you could use me just to be the custodian at the church, I want to come back to First Baptist Church. He used to teach school here. He left and he called back and he said, I miss First Baptist. He said, that's the best place I ever was in my life. Don't forget that in case you ever decide to leave. He said, Brother Hiles, my wife and I were happy and we didn't know how happy we were. He said, if I could just be the custodian. Did you know that's one reason when I hire people here at First Baptist Church, I sometimes hire a person for some little, piddling, insignificant job, see what he's made of, see if God can use him? We gave Brother Fisk a doctor's degree the other night. Dr. Fisk, and he deserves it, and I mean that, he deserves it. You know why he deserves it? One reason he deserves it? You know what I hired him first to do? Sweep the place. He's the fella I used to say, instead of Bob, I used to say, C.W., this building's too cold. Get that thing fixed right. He'd go down there and get it fixed right. Never talk back. Oh, one time I slapped him in the face, and then he never talked back. By the way, honestly, if I did slap him in the face, or if I took a knife and stabbed him in the stomach, he'd pull the knife out and say, Preacher, if you felt led to stab me, here's the knife back. Do it again if God says do it. That's the kind of people God can use. That's the kind of folks God's looking for. Time and time again, I've called a person to my office to talk to him about, listen, there are 25 men in America that I haven't hired because they wouldn't work for nothing. I've called men in my office and told them purposely several thousand dollars less than we'd pay them salary because I wanted to see if they're willing to scrub the floors and go hungry for God. I've never thought about salary when I preached. I started off for $7.50 a week. I'd been preaching 2 years before I made over $20 a week. I was pastor of First Baptist Church in Hammond, Indiana before I made over $100 a week. And I've called men in and I've said, we'll pay you so much money. And the men have said, well, I can't live on that. And I've said, okay, that's all I can pay. I had in mind within a month's time, maybe almost doubling that salary. No, I want little people. And God wants little people. And I want the little fella. And God wants the little fella. And I want people that don't think they're very much. I want people that don't think they deserve very much. I want people who make, if they make a dime, say, blessed be God, I don't deserve it. And that's one reason why Brother Fisk hired him to be a custodian. And then a part-time worker on the staff. But he wasn't too good to swing the mop and swing the broom. And do you swing a mop and swing a broom? Roy Tobin is swinging up here a while ago while he was singing. But swinging a mop and swinging a broom wasn't too good. That's the kind of folks God is. God doesn't use big shots. God uses little shots. He doesn't use the strong, use the weak. He doesn't use the mighty, use the base. He doesn't use those that are something, uses those that are not something. That's the kind of people that God uses. Now let's go back. Think in history sometimes, the people that God has used. Billy Sunday never went to school. Billy Sunday was never ordained. You know why? He flunked the ordination test. Boy, I'd hate to have been sitting on that committee, wouldn't you? Flunked the ordination test. When Dwight Moody got saved, tried to join the church, he flunked the admission test into the church. God pity the church. Wouldn't you love to live with that all of your life? I bet up in heaven that preacher's still blushing. Oh, good night, Peter. I sure goofed it down there. Just a 17-year-old kid wanted to join the congregational church up in Northfield, Massachusetts. And I didn't know he was going to be a great evangelist. And I bet Mr. Moody up there is all the time. Yeah. I told you, boy, you didn't know, did you? No, you didn't know. Did you know that Jonathan Edwards, the great Jonathan Edwards, was kicked out of his first church? Why? He preached against dancing in the theater and unconverted folks taking communion. And God uses people like that. The girl in the corner that I've called down once before, the second one from the end with the long hair, don't you take your eyes off me the rest of this service. God uses the little people. God uses the no counts. Whom did God use to cause the Midianite army to flee and win the battle over the Jews with 300 people? A Gideon, little runt.
Whom did God use to part the Red Sea and lead 3.5 million Jews to the promised land? Who was it?
Little slave boy found with the queen, the king's daughter in an ark of bulrushes. Whom did God use to feed the 5,000? A little lad.
Whom did God use to point Naaman to the great Elisha?
A little maid. God uses little people. Sam Jones, Jonathan Edwards, and others. Did you know God uses the nobodies? God uses the nobodies. For example, have you noticed how that God does not bless denominations when they get to be something? Take our Methodist brethren. The Methodist denomination was started as an off-brand kind of group, sort of like we are here in Hammond. That's what the Methodists were.
John Wesley pulled out the Episcopalian Church of England, started the Methodist Church. They're a movement. They were hated fanatics, always bothering folks, always witnessing to people. Now listen, John Wesley went back to preach in churches, and you read his biography or his diary sometime.
It says, John Wesley said, preached in St. Anne's, kicked out after first sermon, asked not to come back. Evening, p.m., preached in St. George's, can't go back there either.
Sunday morning, June 20th, a.m.,
preached in St. John's, told never to return.
P.M.,
preached in St. Jude's, can't go back there either.
Sunday morning, June 27th, a.m.,
preached in St. James, stone, kicked out of the church.
Sunday afternoon, June 27, p.m.,
priest in the street, kicked out of the street.
Sunday night, priest in the meadow,
kicked out of the meadow. He went to the tombstone of his own father, and on the tombstone of his own father, using his father's tombstone for a pulpit,
preached to 20,000 people. They stoned him, and with blood running down his face, he kept on preaching. That's what made the Methodist denomination, brother. And what killed it
was when she got big and famous and rich and thought she was somebody. And she's dead tonight. God uses nobodies. So what happened? Pentecostal Assembly of God pulled out, started the Pentecostal Assembly of God movement, and they were nobodies, and God used them. Then what happened? Nazarenes pulled out, and there were nobodies, then God used them.
What's happening to the Nazarenes tonight?
They're trying to become somebody, and God won't use them like he did. Assembly of God's trying to become somebody, and God won't use them like he did.
God will not
use a group of people who get the glory and don't give him the glory. That's one reason why God doesn't use a lot of our denominational plans. We have a denominational secretary spend all their time in some big office trying to run the church's business and tell them what to do. Somebody ought to send them out soul winning. Or get them saved. Or both.
I'm simply saying, take the Presbyterians with John Calvin, John Welch, and John Knox, and all those great men of God, aflame for God, aflame with the Holy Ghost of God. They were nobodies.
Burned at the stake and hated and gave their lives for God. John Wycliffe and others gave their lives for God, ran for their safety and ran for their refuge and ran for their lives.
There are nobodies.
God used them to shake the whole world for his glory. But now you can't find a Presbyterian church within miles of here. It even has church tonight. You know what happened? They quit being nobodies. Let me say a word to the men on the platform and you young preachers and the faculty members of the school here. We have a college, but God is not any more impressed with us than he was before we started the college.
We have doctor's degrees, but God is not any more impressed with my doctor's degrees than he was the little old brother Jack that used to call me as a kid preacher in East Texas. God does not bless you because you're somebody. God bless you because you're nobody.
And I wouldn't want to give a degree to anybody that didn't think, oh, I shouldn't have it. There's so many others that ought to have it before me. I shouldn't have it. God blesses little nobodies. You know, that's one thing I look for when I interview somebody. Dr. Billings will tell you, I turn down more folks than I accept when I interview. I interview all the teachers. I'm in a teacher for a kindergarten or a teacher for the grade school, junior high school or college. Now, I interview all the teachers. And one of the first things I look for is if they think they're nobodies. If they think they're nobodies. I don't want any big shots at Hiles Anderson College. I don't want professors that stand up and the students, I want the students to be awed at them. I want some professors that stand up and think they're not worthy even teaching the school.
Oh, I'm not saying I don't want folks who are qualified. I'm simply saying one of the qualifications is to be a little fellow.
Take churches. Hey, did you know what? You know God's not impressed with us because we have the largest Sunday school in the world? Do you know that?
Did you know one of the surest ways in this world for God to withhold His power and Spirit from this church is for us to get impressed with ourselves? God uses nobodies. God uses bad people. God uses people who have nothing which to claim except the breath of God. I've done this time and time and time again. I've walked up to preach, and I'd be preaching along, and I'd be doing pretty good, I thought. And then soon I'd think maybe I'm doing pretty good, and I'd stumble and fall. Fellows, you know how many times you've gone to the pulpit, and I like what that country preacher in Texas said. He came home one day from church, and he was so mad and discouraged. He was crying and went to his room, and his wife said, "It's time to eat." And he said, "I don't want to eat." And she said, "What's wrong with you?" And he said, "I tell you what's wrong with me. I can't preach, and I don't know anybody that can." And that's the way I feel sometimes. After I lay a few eggs, I go to my study and say, "Was that me?" And then all week, I'll say, "Lord, help me. Lord, help me. Lord, when I preach Sunday, do something to the people while I preach. I don't mean a good sermon. I mean, use me and shake somebody and change somebody and mold somebody. Use me while I preach." And I'll walk in the door over here and I'll say, "Oh, God, I need help. I need help. I need help." That's when God uses the most. You know, it's a strange thing. Last Sunday night when I was preaching, I was so tired, I thought I couldn't walk out the door. Absolutely, I was so tired. I preached on "Search Me, O God." And honestly, if I got searched, He'd had to search me. I didn't have enough energy to do it. And I was so tired and had to fly to Alaska all across the country and fly 10 or 12 hours on Monday. And during my sermon, I said, "Lord, I don't think I can finish this sermon if you don't give me some strength. I'm about to fall over. I'm tired and I'm sleepy and I'm worn out. Lord, help me." And you know what? More people have come by and told me that sermon blessed them last Sunday night than any sermon in a long time. You know, in our weakness, we're made strong. In our strength, we're made weak. God will not use big people. God will not use big churches. Listen, I do not want people to look at, I do not want us to say, "Well, First Baptist, we do have the greatest church in all the world." But the reason we do is not because we're somebody. It's because God in His mercy has seen fit to meet with us here week after week after week after week. 'Tis God. Once it was the blessing, now it is the Lord. Once it was the feeling, now it is His word. Once His gifts I wanted, now the giver on. Once I sought for healing, now Himself alone. All in all is Jesus. Of Jesus will I sing. Everything is Jesus, and Jesus everything. You know, it's a strange thing. I run around with big preachers. I know personally all the big preachers in America. I mean, fundamental preachers. I don't know Norman Vincent Peale. But I know all the Bible preachers in America. And I do not know who wrote The Power of Positive Stinking and things like that. But I know all the great fundamental preachers in America. And it's a strange thing. I get around a fella running 3,000 in Sunday school and get nervous. You know why? Because I don't even think about us. I still find myself identifying myself with a little church in the country in East Texas. I don't want to be a big preacher. I just want to be used of God. I don't mind you calling me Dr. Hiles if you want to, but I prefer Brother Hiles. Or I prefer preacher. Now, if you want to say Dr. Hiles, up to you. I don't think it's a sin to say Dr. Hiles. The word doctor means teacher, and I try to teach you. And that's just like saying teacher Hiles. I don't mind that. But I like preacher better. I like brother better. And I'd rather sit on a log and talk about the Bible with some poor little lady down in the Forks of the Creek somewhere than to talk about it with Karl Barth or some other great theologian somewhere. Listen, you know one reason God uses this place? We're a bunch of little people just trying to get the work done for God. We're not trying to impress anybody. We're not trying to be big shots. We're not trying to make a big name for anybody. We're just trying to get the job done for God. And listen, as long as we can stay that way, God can use us, because God uses little, base, bad nobodies like us. That's who God uses. Listen, Dr. So-and-so, God is impressed. Jim Vineyard. He is right now, he has risen beyond any shadow of a doubt to becoming, if not the, at least equal to Dr. Beebe, as the busman in America today. But you know one reason God used him? He's just old Jim. Just old Jim. God can't look at him and say he's doing it because he's handsome. Or it's his head of hair. Actually, we're not trying to grow more hair for Brother Jim. Now we're trying to shrivel his head some if we can. But God, you know why God used him? He's not concerned. You know why God uses Dr. Billings? He gets up and sings a solo and says, and all the people said, "Amen. How you doing, Doc? Gorgeous today." He's not impressed with himself. He's no big college president.
I go out there on the campus sometimes, and Doc's got his shirt off, sleeves rolled up. I'm not his shirt off, got his coat off. I saw him with his shirt off one time, and all everybody that's ever seen him has never been the same since. He's built like a Pepsi Cola bottle. But you know why God used him? Because he's not trying to be a big shot. You know why God, Max Elton over here, one of the finest fellows God ever made. You know why God uses Max Elton? He's a servant. He's a servant. Sometimes when I'm in a distant city, I'll need to call the college, and it may be late at night, midnight. I call the college numbers of times. Max Elton answers the phone. He's out there working. Sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning. Do most anything. He's no, in his own mind, he's no big shot. He's just a little fella God uses. That's the way it is. That's the kind of people God uses. God doesn't use big shots. You young preacher boys, with all the aspirations of having a big title and a big name, God doesn't use that. No, God doesn't. God's not impressed with that. God uses little people. You know, up in the earlier part of this chapter 1 of 1 Corinthians, the Lord talks about the cross. He's talking about the cross is to those that perish foolishness, but to those that believe, it's the power of God unto salvation. And the preaching of the cross has power, and it's called foolish to others. Nothing could be more repulsive than a cross. Nothing could be more repulsive to a human race than an old cross with somebody dying on it and blood dropping down his body and blood running down the bark of the tree of the cross. Nothing's more repulsive. But that cross has caused more people to leave family and do something for God than anything in the whole world. How many people have left home and friend and jobs and gone away just because of that cross? Oh, the old rugged cross, so despised by the world, has a wondrous attraction for me. For the dear Lamb of God shed his glory above and shed it on dark Calvary. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross till at last my trophies I lay down. Oh, the old rugged cross. The cross. Despise. Preach the cross and be hated. Preach the cross and be a nut. Preach the cross and be a moron. Preach the cross and be base. Preach the cross and be a nobody. Preach the cross and be no count. But that same kind of person that's no count to the world, God looks down and says, I want to use that man. He's willing to be spit on and hated. This kind of Christianity nowadays that doesn't want to be hated. This kind of Christianity that wants to be accepted. This kind of Christianity wants to have crowns and applause and compliments. That's not Bible Christianity. Bible Christianity is being beaten for Jesus and hated by all men for his sake, and being stoned and beat up and having your nose bloodied and folks lying about you and cursing you and hating you and spitting on you and driving your nails in your hands and turning their back on you and hating you and trying to slander you and hurt you and kill you if they could. That's Bible Christianity. Check the Bible and see what happened to God's men in the Bible. Peter was crucified upside down. James was boiled in oil. John the Baptist was beheaded. Over and over again, every one of the 12 disciples, apostles died an unnatural death of martyrdom for the gospel of Christ. Should I be carried to the skies on flowery beds of ease? What others fought to win the prize and sail through bloody seas? No, I must fight if I would gain. Increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil and endure the pain, supported by thy word.